This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
Richard Allen, the Delphi murder case, it continues to get closer and closer to the trial date as of this recording. Still set. Not any pushbacks, no rescheduling. That could, of course, change. Lots of things change in this case. But there is new information that has come out. There is lost evidence. There may be other suspects. There is bizarre reasoning as to why the list of suspects is gone, never actually maybe even took place. Here to discuss all of it and the thousands of layers in this since we last talked about it, I don't know, a week or two ago, defense attorney Bob Motta, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Where do you want to start?
Man, it's the world's largest onion, right?
Oh, like, my God.
It's a million layers.
Or dumpster fire.
Well, it's an onion in a dumpster fire. So anywhere you want to start. I obviously went down, as I always do, to the hearing. And, you know, I mean, the morning session was... leading into the afternoon as well, was the motion for contempt filed by Nick McClelland with respect to, you know, seeking to punish the defense attorneys. And that lasted, like I said, all morning, went into the afternoon. I think he finally wrapped that motion after Hennessy's, you know, the defense's case or their defense to it at about 2:30. At 2:30, they then went into... Baldwin and Rosie's motion to dismiss for destruction of potentially exculpatory evidence. And that went till about 5:30. Like she let it run because early in the day, you know, Baldwin had said, look, I don't know how long this contempt thing's going to last, but you know, my thing's pretty lengthy. I've got several witnesses. She said, I scheduled for one day, plan accordingly.
Yeah.
So there was no chance that it was going to get extended for a second day. So Baldwin basically had to pick and choose his witnesses. So you tell me, which thing do you want to talk about? One was important.
Yeah.
One wasn't. Motion to dismiss was important.
Yes. Yeah. Let's start with the contempt hearing because, you know, that's still ongoing, which seems a little bit ridiculous. How did that all play out exactly? I mean, we know, you know, the reality of this is these images were essentially stolen out of his office. He did not willingly go and share these out in any way, shape, or form. One of the points that I've been thinking on this is it's like, okay, and obviously there's a lot of issues with the prosecution and how the police handled it, but let's just say the tables were turned on this and someone stole something out of the prosecutor's office that they weren't supposed to do, but the prosecutor didn't leak it. Would we be having the same conversation? Would they be looking at the prosecutor going, we got to change, this is not okay, this is not, or we'll be looking at it as like, yeah, like there's people stole shit, you know, and this is not acceptable, but it did happen.
Right. Yeah. It's, I guess it depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
You know, if you ask a prosecutor, they're going to say, oh, if the shoe were on the other foot, you guys would be losing your minds. And I'm like, well, doubtful. I mean, I've been a defense attorney for 20 years and prosecutors leak shit to the media all the time.
Yes.
You know, so it's like, that's their move. So I don't know that I would be. It's kind of a incorrect rationalization from that perspective. But, you know, look, the way that I looked at it was, and it's always been my opinion, the stealing of crime scene photos of the girls is completely disgusting. I don't know who would have the wherewithal or the desire to do that to begin with. It's just a weird thing to want to have possession of and then to leak them out. You know, and I know that we probably talk about this on multiple episodes that we've done. You know, I always look at like who benefits from that, you know, and my position with that has always been when you look back on it, the person who benefited was Nick McClelland because it got the trial delayed. Because remember, they were ready to go. They being the defense was ready to go on this thing. On January 8th. And that, you know, when this thing goes down in October of 2023, we're talking late October, we're talking 2 months and some change before you're at trial. And, you know, people that kind of don't understand the amount of preparation that goes into a trial like this. Like, lawyers aren't walking into a trial winging it.
Sure.
You know, everything has to be just so. You have to get everything lined up, all your witnesses, all your exhibits, everything. Everybody's got to get subpoenaed. Your experts have to all be, you know, ready to go. It's just a massive amount of work. And in the meantime, McClelland, you know, at that point was basically by himself. I think he had one other lawyer in there. And, you know, just from an outsider looking in, I'm like, man, you know, I actually felt pretty sympathetic towards him. I'm like, that is a hell of a lot of work to do in a, you know, for a very small office on a very big case.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I just kind of looked at who benefited from the leak in general, it certainly wasn't the defense. It certainly wasn't Rick Allen.
No.
And it appeared very much to be, to me, to be Nick McClelland.
Yeah.
So, you know, what that means, I don't know. You know, I certainly, there was no evidence presented at this hearing on the defense side of it that McClelland had a hand in it. Just like there was no evidence presented by the state that Baldwin had a hand in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on the state's case in chief, in terms of the motion, the contempt motion, they first call a cop named Steve Mullen, who back in the day was the chief of police of Delphi. Mm-hmm. And he gets on, and he's a part of this investigation into the leak. You know, he testifies to certain things. They then put Holman on. And, you know, he's talking about certain things. And basically, they went out and they interviewed various people. They're trying to collect evidence. They're trying to find out what's what. McClelland continues to call it a continuing leak. So there were three main points that McClelland was trying to prove. Mm-hmm. One, that the defense had released their press release after the gag order was put in place. Two was the misdirected email that Baldwin sent out. And three was the leak of the crime scene photos. And McClelland had, in this hearing, tried to say that it was a continuing leak because they had recovered messages from Westerman, who was the gentleman who went into Baldwin's office and allegedly took these pictures, admittedly, at least in his affidavit, took these pictures and then distributed them, that they had messages from his iCloud, where, you know, he was talking to Andy. So like Andy Baldwin, the defense attorney, about strategy and things like that. No smoking guns there. There's nothing wrong with defense attorneys, discussing strategy with non-lawyers. As a matter of fact, it's something that we all do. In terms of trying to prepare a case, it's like talking to other lawyers is sometimes like, you know, screaming in an echo chamber. You want people that aren't lawyers so that you're getting a non-lawyer mind to see if you have theories or strategies that you're throwing out there and whether or not it would resonate with lay people. So, I mean, you have to do that. And that's exactly what was going on with him. So the other thing was, is that they had messages from Robert Fortson, who was the unfortunate veteran who ended up ending his own life. And it came out that Holman was the one sergeant, or the, you know, state trooper Holman, who now just got a promotion to lieutenant.
Yeah.
Right after that hearing, he was out there interviewing Fortson and, you know, was really squeezing him. Fortson like lawyered up right away, you know, six times. He's like, I want to consult with an attorney. And Holman just kept talking. I don't know that he was asking him questions, but he kept saying things. Oh, well, you know, there's a high likelihood that you're going to be held in contempt. You know, I'm going to have to call the judge and tell her that you're not, you know, you're not working with me here, and, you know, you might go to jail. So he keeps like making these veiled threats to Fortson, and Fortson like just is like, you know what, man, I'm not going to talk to you. And he goes, Holman goes so far as to like leave the room, pretend like he's calling the judge. And I guess he really calls McClelland. So ultimately what comes out of those meetings is that they get a bunch of messages between Fortson and a guy named Mark Robert Cohen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Fortson is telling Cohen things that aren't public yet, like that they discovered, that the defense discovered who the professor was from Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
And so McClelland's insinuating that either Baldwin is talking to Fortson and leaking information to him to spread, they're not able to prove that up in any way, shape, or form. I'm sure what was happening is that Baldwin was speaking with Westerman, who at that point was still his confidant, saying, oh man, yeah, we dug up, we finally found the professor, whatever, you know, talking about that. And at that point, the state basically rests. You know, they're not able to, they can't have said that the order, the gag order came the day after the press release. So there's nothing willful about that. And in order for him to prevail on a contempt motion, it's got to be a situation where it's shown and it's proven by beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal contempt that it was willful, that they meant to do it, that he was, you know, willfully violating a court order, not negligently, you know, by not having the door locked or whatever. So he ends his case in chief. And then Hennessy puts on three older attorneys, all with a ton of experience, all 30 plus year attorneys, all trial lawyers, you know, and he's asking him, look, do you ever talk to lay people about your strategies? They were all like, of course we do. You know, have you ever sent a misdirected email? Yes, of course we have. I've sent them. I've received them. How do you handle it? Goes through all that stuff. Puts Brad Rosie on. Rosie is basically saying, look, I didn't know anything about any of this stuff until after the fact. Like, and as soon as I found out about it, I let the judge know or McClellan know.
Yeah.
You know, and so ultimately, Hennessy, and he put on a couple other witnesses because Hennessy was trying to establish that there were other leaks, that this wasn't the only leak. I knew that strategy would kind of fall on deaf ears with Gull just because two wrongs don't make a right. Like, you know, I mean, I knew what he was trying to do. I just knew with this judge, it would not be impactful.
Yeah.
So ultimately that hearing goes through and, you know, what everybody's waiting for, you know, in terms of bated breath is what is Gull going to do at that point. So at the end of it, Hennessy, neither of them really gave super compelling argument as to why or what the penalty should be, whatever sanction. And so Hennessy says, look, and he was done at that point. It had been a long hearing. Like, I think he was over it. And he's like, I'd like your honor to allow me give me leave of court to file a memo in writing as to, you know, what my argument is. And she said, fine, I'll give you 7 days, Mr. McClellan. I'm going to give you 7 days, which brings us to April 1st. And then I'm going to give myself 30 days to rule on it, which brings us to May 1st, which is 13 days before trial.
Sure.
So reading through the tea leaves, you know, she's not removing him from the case, which isn't an option in a contempt hearing anyway. But we also know that she doesn't necessarily care about the rules in terms of her ruling. So, you know, like I understood that, like, people are like, she can't do that. I'm like, I know she can't do it. That doesn't mean she won't do it.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.